I think it's going to run over into three classes. And study of gacha is the first part of trying to prove emptiness. So gacha means, Kylie knows, we had it once before. And the people from the first course, I hope, know it. Wait, who might remember? This is still wrong. Remember gacha?
I remember the word.
That's why it's not the sacred space I want to do.
Be cold and holy.
Well, you can drink it because you're not a
sacred. It's okay. No, that's fine. So, gacha means the thing that we deny. It means the thing that we say doesn't exist. It's the thing that emptiness is empty of. It's a self-existent thing that doesn't exist anywhere.
That what ain't.
Can you repeat again? God
means deny. And you'll see it oftentimes, they'll say refute. And Ja means to be. Object. So if I say, gacha means self-existent thing. Gacha means a thing which exists by itself. And there's no such thing. So gacha, when you say emptiness means something's missing. Like today my lama sent me to take the garbage out and I pick up the can and it's empty. So I'm expecting garbage, but it's empty. So that then the gacha in that case was garbage. So gacha means the thing that we say doesn't exist, the thing which we deny. Gacha means that.
Object being negated.
They you hear all sorts of different translations.
And this is the first
part. I call it the object.
I don't care.
It's the thing we say doesn't exist.
It's the thing what, who says.
All Buddhists. It's what emptiness is empty of.
Self-nature.
Yeah, you can call it self-nature. We're going to go into it very deeply. I mean, different schools call it different things.
The object of ignorance.
Long story. Okay. Yeah. They call it object to be refuted, object to be denied, okay. Object
and
to be negated.
And this is what varies between among the schools.
Oh, big differences between the schools. Yeah.
Right, but it's the same word.
Yeah, sure. This word is the same. Gacha. What we're trying to deny, what we're trying to say doesn't exist, is different for each school. Okay. Gacha.
Are we still wearing the same hat?
We're wearing Svatantrika hat for this whole course. Okay. And here you're going to get a good dose of Svatantrika. Okay, that's a little bit different from.
As Svatantriks, do we agree with ourselves?
Well, sure, you have to defend it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's gacha. Gacha is what emptiness is empty of. Right? And the very first section in studying gacha is identifying what is the gacha. That's the first part. I mean, first of all, before you can understand what, you have to understand what the gacha is.
Self-existent nature is a word.
You have to understand that before you can understand emptiness. Because emptiness means
the absence of that.
So if you don't know what it's absent of, then you can't study emptiness. The book gives an example. It says, if you want to know if there's a water pitcher in this room, you have to have a mental picture of a water pitcher. If you don't know what a water pitcher is, you can't realize its absence in this room. And that's the same thing. If you don't know what the gacha is, you'll never understand emptiness. If you don't know what a self-existent thing, should I say, is, or is supposed to be. Okay, what it would be like if it did exist, then you can't understand emptiness. You have to have a good idea of what a self-existent thing is. Okay, otherwise you'll never understand its emptiness. And then they always quote two lines from Shantideva. They're in your handout, but they say, Gakpe Mula Ma Rekpa Desi Deing Lume Jimayin. which is very famous. Good way to start a debate in the monastery. Until you are able to find what it is that you think exists, you will never be able to realize that it doesn't exist. So you have to understand what it is, what a self-existent thing would look like if a self-existent thing existed. And that's why you have to study Gaptar. Before you study the proofs for emptiness, you have to study what they are trying to deny.
When you first start to study this, don't you get the feeling that it's kind of semantics?
At first. And it's a kind of blessing. It's a kind of result of your good deeds when it becomes very meaningful to you. They say in Tibetan, Gawa Me, if it sounds to you like semantics, or if it sounds like just arguing about words, you're missing something. And it does at the beginning. And before we study Madhyamika in the monastery, before we study emptiness, we have to do all these practices. I mean, they stop for 6 months or 8 months, and they just try to get enough goodness to understand. They just pray for understanding emptiness. Rinpoche, or my lama, he went to some cave, and before he opened the book, he did all these meditations and prayers that he would have enough goodness to catch it. And you find students that don't.
There's six of them that I really don't understand. Between the Hinayana and the Mahayana with respect to understanding emptiness, goodness, because it's a different kind of merit you're accumulating.
Not really. I mean, any kind of merit is fine. There's better ones, and there's more powerful ones and less powerful ones. But
they both work.
I mean, giving fruit to a god.
Oh, sure.
Correctly. Yeah, any good deed. Yeah, any good deed helps a lot. But there are like we're studying logic nowadays, and logic seems very dry and very irrelevant. But if you have a kelwa, if you have the goodness in you, then when you study it, it blows your mind. You suddenly realize that you can prove past lives, or you can prove the existence of emptiness and things like that. So it's just some kind of two different people can go to the same subject and catch different things. You know, it's like people look at artwork or music or things like that. Okay, so that's gacha. Gacha, if it existed, would exist in a way which was opposite to the way that things exist, what you call conventionally or what we call deceptively. Okay, I'll say that again.
Thank you.
If it existed, it would have to exist in a way that was the opposite of the way things actually exist. Mm-hmm. And when I say actually exist, I say deceptively exist.
Right, which is the way we see things.
Like that. The way that things conventionally exist. If the Gacha did exist, it would exist in a way that was the opposite of the way that things really do conventionally exist. So first you have to study how do things exist conventionally. I don't like to call it conventionally. I prefer deceptively, because that's the word. Okay, they call it deceptively. Did I lose anybody? You all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
It seems to be the opposite.
Excuse me?
No, I mean, it seems to be not... In other words, you're trying to say...
Right. If it existed,
it
would have to exist in a way that was the opposite of the way
that. But I thought that you were saying that what it is a deceptive thing, and you're saying if it existed, then if this deceptive thing existed, it would be the opposite of a deceptive thing.
No, all things around us are deceptive, and if it existed, it would have to be something that doesn't exist deceptively. It doesn't exist deceptively. It doesn't exist at all. The Gacha doesn't exist at all.
Any more than anything else, though.
Oh, yeah, no, sure. All other things that you see exist deceptively. Gaksha doesn't exist deceptively or ultimately. It just doesn't exist.
Oh, okay, okay.
It's a self-existent thing. It's a boy with two heads. It's an elephant in this room right now. It's, I don't want to say an honest politician. I don't mean that. You know, it's just a thing that doesn't exist. But you better know what it looks like, because supposedly you see everything this way. Supposedly you are often seeing gakchas when you are angry or when you have desire. I would say, it's very interesting, I would say you can't have an emotion that is negative unless you are focused on the gakcha. That's pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Why would a positive emotion be different?
Well, I mean, positive, like Mingme and Mingje, like the ultimate kind of compassion understands the emptiness of its object. That's what I'm saying. But most, yeah, any normal positive emotion also. But the emotions that get you in trouble, desire, hatred, jealousy, these, at the moment that you have them, you must be focused on the gakcha. And that's why when you understand that there is no gakcha, you can reach nirvana. That's why you can become an arahant. A photostrime. What's a photostrime?
Go back.
This is for last week. Okay, sorry. Photostrime is the Tibetan translation of arahant. And there are Sanskrit roots, arh. They can be related to enemy. So the Tibetans call arhat enemy destroyer. The word in Sanskrit also means worthy one, one who is worthy. Arh means he who is worthy. So sometimes if you're reading a Tibetan translation of Tibetan, and even a Tibetan book, it'll say, arhats are arhats because they are worthy of all the world to bow down to. And you don't know why, so why did they come here, you know? In Tibetan, the pun doesn't come out. You see, in Sanskrit, it's arhat, is arh for the world to bow down to. And then the Tibetans just translated it, you know, enemy killers are worthy, and then you missed the pun.
Oh, can we go back even further? On the two, are the self-made Buddhas also arhats when they reach?
Yeah.
So they're both those paths end in arhatship.
Yeah.
And what are the
names?
Oh, okay. I think we have four now. Is that
something? No, the
three. Oh, yeah. Okay, so number four is arhat. Okay. Number four is arhat. These are the four results of the path. I did not teach you last week. I was supposed to teach you last week.
Four results.
Four results of the path. You haven't had this yet.
Which path?
The general Buddhist path. It's a good question. I'm not talking the five paths, I'm not talking the three paths. I'm talking the general Buddhist practice. Normally, path is a mental state, but this time we're talking the method. The result of that method is that...
You can start with number four, number
I'll start with number one. How's that?
Okay.
Number one is called stream enterer.
Stream
enterer. One who is entering the stream.
What stream would that be?
It's the stream that where the
highway to heaven.
Yes, it's the stairway to heaven. Yeah, you're no longer having. It's the stream. It's the immediate. It's the process at which you are on your way out. You can call it on your way out. I almost prefer that. You've just reached the first step of being on your way out of suffering. This is a person who has perceived emptiness directly. So you could guess Dhamma. What else happens when you reach Dhamma?
The individual analysis of the four that's Aryan truths.
But I mean the first instant of Dhamma.
Of what, please?
Of the path of seeing.
And say that word again, please.
Tonglen. You become an Arya, what we call realized person. You reach the first Bodhisattva Buddha.
Become.
What else? You get rid of forever your belief in self-existence, etc., etc.
This is number one.
This is what happens. Yeah, yeah.
Is when that you,
Result number one, result of the path, is that you become a stream enterer. You are on your way out. You're definitely on your way out.
Which means you've seen emptiness directly. And
right.
The first step.
And that's what stream enterer means.
Is
that's
that natural nirvana?
You perceive natural nirvana.
Out of what? Of samsara?
Sure. Yeah, suffering. The second one is called a once-returner.
Once-returner.
Someone who's going to come back one more time.
Back to the earth or just anywhere?
This doesn't mean what it sounds like, okay? This means to the desire realm. Okay? You will only have to take, at the most, one more birth in the desire realm.
In human form?
No, it could be in any of the six forms, but I assume he's good enough that he's going to be a human. Yeah.
Is that nirvana with something left over?
No, not according to our present school. Yeah, yes.
Now, does this also mean it's going to be the next birth, or could there be several births in the form realm?
I believe normally it's the next one. But it's in this book.
You say the six desire realms. Are you talking about the six
levels of the desire realm?
About the six different realms.
Well, the desire realm has all six births in it.
Oh, I thought it was only
the
humans.
Form and formless realm only have the birth, the pleasure being birth. That's
so,
another subject.
So it just means samsara.
No. It means he might take a lot of births in the form realm or the formless realm, but he only has to come back to this realm one more time. This realm is the lowest realm. This is the realm where we live in. It's called desire realm because if you have your life is run by a desire for food and sex. Basically, that's the way the first desire realm is.
But you said it's not the human realm.
Humans live in the desire realm, but so do animals and hell beings and pretas, and the lowest devas and the lowest pleasure beings live here also. But the higher pleasure beings live in the form realm and the formless realm. So this realm has all six kinds of births in it, but the other two realms only have one kind of birth in it.
And this is what you see when you perceive emptiness, you know?
We weren't talking about that. I don't know how we got on that. Oh, you only have to come back here one more time. It's a matter of bad thoughts. It's a matter of afflictions, mental afflictions. You can only be born in this realm if you have a pretty heavy dose of bad thoughts in you. And as you're traveling along the path of habituation, you start to overcome those bad thoughts so that you don't have to take birth here again.
But what
only
happens
one
if you have
time.
To
I've never understood how you can achieve nirvana from the god realms. They're so awful.
It's pretty difficult.
Well, why wouldn't it be more desirable than
to be in the desire realm? I'm not sure you have to take birth in the form
realm.
I have to check it out.
I would think it would be. Sure.
It's difficult from that realm to take to reach nirvana. It's true because it's so pleasant.
What's an arya again?
Someone who's perceived emptiness directly.
No, not an arhat, an arya.
Arya has perceived emptiness directly. We didn't get to the arhat yet. Okay, so that's the first and second results, right? Now we're on number three, right? He's called a non-returner. He will not have to take another birth in the desire realm.
Three is a non-returner.
That's number three.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, non-returner, not coming back again to this realm, to the desire realm. Yeah. Desire realm is supposed to be the best one for achieving enlightenment because it's you're intelligent. It's not so much suffering that you can't think straight, which is the problem with the hell realms. But it's also not so much pleasure that you can't think straight, which is the problem with the higher realms. With the two higher realms. So it's supposed to be a good mix of suffering and leisure, of the time and the brains to think in this realm. In the hells, you have a good dose of suffering. But
you mean the human realm is
this
realm?
Yeah.
You said the desire realm. But
well,
the
human segment
six.
Of the desire realm. Okay.
The middle
segment.
Part. Upper middle.
What did you start to say about the hell realm?
They can't achieve any lams normally because they it's so much pain that they can't think straight. Their ability to think is impaired by the tremendous pain. They can't think straight. Although there is a debate about whether the Buddha ever there is a story, that, there is a scripture that says that he achieved bodhicitta in the hell realm. But the Abhidharma says it wasn't quite like that. But that's another story. So that's a non-returner. And then the fourth result is arhat, is a foe destroyer. And the enemy is your bad thoughts and their seeds. So becoming an arhat, becoming a foe destroyer, and reaching nirvana are all the same thing.
The enemy, the foe destroyer, is your...
Yeah, when you say foe destroyer,
right.
Who is it you... Who's the foe? The foe is your bad thoughts.
Your
and,
bad.
And the seeds for those.
It's the bad thoughts and the seeds,
right.
Both?
Right.
Not the actions, just the thoughts.
Right. But actually you can't collect the actions. You can't collect karma per se if you don't have those bad thoughts.
What was that section on the results of the three paths or the two paths?
This was it. I don't remember the question. Let me see.
Describe the three main parts of the method for achieving nirvana.
Oh, that was something
no,
different.
That was a different question. I'm sorry. What's your foe destroyer and what are the three results of the... I'm sorry, what is the foe destroyer and what are the three results of the path?
Right, and that... What is a foe destroyer? That's result number four. And what are the three results of the path that lead up to it? That was, you know, extreme enter, once returner, non-returner. Stream enter, once returner, and non-returner.
So are the results of those paths really put in a bit of it too?
It's not presented that way. It's not... This is mainly taught in the Abhidharma, which is Hinayana.
Are we only ever going to be... One only ever applies these labels and categorizes things this way when one's talking about low vehicle practitioners, right?
Mainly.
Although
mainly.
Bodhisattvas...
But they apply to bodhisattvas too.
They do.
Yeah.
So how do you know what they're...
I don't think it's necessarily track specific, you know what I mean? I've never seen a... It is presented in the... It's called Ginden Nishu, the 20 different divisions of practitioners. You study that maybe in about 2 years. But it breaks it all down into, you know, arhats, Hinayana arhats, Mahayana arhats, like this. You get 20 different divisions, actually. It's called Ginden Nishu.
Because usually you see... These terms being used only in connection with Hinayana.
Normally, but it's not. No, obviously you could have a bodhisattva. Okay, back to the subject. Gaksha.
Back to gaksha.
So, gaksha is a non-existent thing. If it did exist, it would have to exist in the way, in an opposite way from the way all these things really do exist.
Except the rabbit with a
deceptively
horn.
So, we want to know. How did the Svatantras explain
of it?
How we see deceptive reality? Okay. How do they explain how we see the things around us? Because according to them, and according to us too, the gaksha should exist the opposite way, if it existed. Got that? That's a little tricky.
So they're saying we see it as its, in its ultimate nature?
No.
No, gaksha would be opposite.
That? No. They say, study how you see the things around you. Because if the gaksha existed, if a self-existent thing existed, it should exist in the opposite way. From the way you really see the things around you. Okay. By the way, what do the higher Madhyamika people say? How do things exist according to them?
Nominally.
Nominally. Mingde Shaktam. Just from your perceptions. And that's what you studied in your last course. Now you're going to get confused because you're dropping down a school. And it's good. And then you sharpen your knowledge.
Not just from your perceptions, from your label.
The word perceptions...
It makes it sound like mind only.
It is pretty much that. When they say label, they mean perceptions. Mingde Shaktam, the word de, da, name, there means perception. Concept.
I thought that we perceive things as deceptive reality, and that's the way in which they do not exist. But they do exist as ultimate reality, and therefore,
no, these things. You could say they're dependent origination,
and they do.
We're going to study their dependent origination. How is it that they really do exist?
And that's is that what we're
They have two kinds of existence. Yeah. One is the ultimate existence, which is totally, totally different. And you'll perceive that when you reach Tonglo.
Yeah.
But then they also have a lower level of existence, which is their dependent origination. Yeah. That they really have.
And we're not trying to refute that.
Not at all.
Oh, I thought that's what we're
if the gacha existed, it would be the opposite of that. That's the point. Did everybody catch that?
No. I got it up to the right end.
Okay.
Things
have two kinds of existence.
Mm-hmm.
Their ultimate existence and their deceptive existence. But they're both valid and they're both real.
I don't understand how this table or our bodies have any ultimate existence, except as a mind stream. That's all that I've understood so far.
We will get to it. First we have to study what they do have. I mean, we'll study the lower existence that they have first. Their lower existence, their lower level of existence, is what we call dependent origination, or deceptive reality. You can call it that, deceptive. Their deceptive reality, their apparent reality, the reality that we see from day to day. We're going to study that.
Oh, you're not going to explain it now?
I'm going to explain it right now.
Oh.
By the way, do you currently even perceive that? Do you currently even understand how you see the things around you? Much less emptiness. Forget this higher reality. The normal reality around you. Do you really understand what's going on? No. You don't even understand its dependent origination.
Michael, what do you mean?
When you understand that, you're pretty high already. You're like,
what do you mean? You really understand what's going on?
I'll talk about it. When you really understand how you're perceiving, forget emptiness, which you can only perceive in deep meditation and directly, okay? Talking about this reality around you right now, you don't even know what you're doing. You don't even know how your mind is making this up right now, or how your mind is establishing these things right now. You don't even know that. You're not even aware of what you're doing.
Well, somebody would say the eye does that, the
we'll
light.
We're talking about it. We're going to talk about it. Okay? Yeah.
You go so far as to say the reason we call deceptive reality is because.
Stop right there. Because we're going to get to that. And the Sotantrics have their special ideas about it. They, just to anticipate myself, okay, they call it deceptive reality because the mind which establishes it is deceptive. And they have this is a different concept. This is their concept.
In a sense, what I was leading to was that. It's the gacha which sort of makes deceptive reality deceptive, because far from believing that it's the wrong thing, we believe it's the right thing.
Different subject. That's a long way down the road, and it's not quite like that, but it's close. Yeah.
So I'm trying to see the distinction between deceptive reality and gacha.
Good.
What is it?
No, that's fine.
What is the distinction?
Deceptive reality is what's really happening.
I see this vase
right here. What your mind is really. The reality that your mind is actually seeing.
So I see this vase. I see it as a vase.
That's not a gacha. Why?
Because it has a dependent or origination.
It exists.
Yeah.
Shichir. Why? Because I see it and I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the proof of something existing in Buddhism. Mm-hmm. If you see it and you're not sick or crazy or hallucinating or drugged,
so what would be
that can't be the gacha.
So what would be the gacha aspect of this vase?
We'll get to
the way we think.
No, that's what I'm going to talk about right now.
Yeah, diluted
the way you think it is.
To discuss the gacha aspect of that vase, you have to understand how it really does exist to you. Because the gacha would be the opposite.
Which is not its ultimate.
Okay, so in a sense, emptiness is the absence of the gacha.
Yeah.
And gacha is something that would exist in a way that was the opposite of the way this vase really does exist.
I was thinking emptiness was the opposite of deceptive reality.
No. Deceptive reality is fine. Deceptive reality and ultimate reality are good friends. They both get along with each other, and they both exist, everything has both. No problem. Okay. It's deceptive, but it's not non-existent.
Deceptive reality and what are good friends?
Ultimate reality.
And so the gacha is non-existent?
Yeah, forget it. He's out of the picture. You know, deceptive reality and ultimate reality are two good friends. And gacha ain't got no reality at all. Gacha doesn't even exist. But there's something in your mind that takes this vase to be self-existent. And we want to identify what's that like.
the self-existence, which is deceptive reality.
No.
What do you mean by self-existence?
We're going to talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Running in circles. So if you say deceptive reality means perceiving it as self-existence, or am I
misunderstanding
that?
We'll talk about it.
Let him
talk.
Yeah, really. I mean, we're going in circles. We're going to go in circles. And
no, I can't remember for it. Say
lo. Lo.
Numela.
Numela.
Nowe.
Nowe.
Wangi.
Wangi.
Shaksam.
Shaksam.
This is how things exist around you, the lower level of reality, what we call deceptive reality. If it's more comfortable, call it conventional reality. This is how things exist around you. Okay. Lo means mind. Okay. Lo means mind. By the way, don't forget, we're in attempt of this. Ne means hurt.
Hurt?
H-U-R-T? Yeah, hurt. Man means not. So what's a lo nu me?
Painless mind.
You'd like that. Yeah. It means unimpaired mind. Unimpaired state of mind. A state of mind which is not messed up by drugs or illness. Also, a mind can be temporarily messed up by outside factors. Inner factors are illness, drugs, alcohol,
and also anger.
Yeah. And then outer factors are like in Tibetan they say when you're rowing in a boat across a lake and it looks like the trees are moving on the shore, but it's you. What do you call it? Your perspective is changing, but part of your mind can be fooled sometimes into thinking that the trees are moving.
When you're on the subway and the next train's leaving, and you think you're moving.
Yeah. That's a very good example. Same thing.
Mirage.
Yeah. We're talking about a mind that's not impaired by those kind of inner or outer factors.
So an outer effect might be like an optical illusion.
Yeah. Not messed up by any outer.
I'm sorry.
Effect. Thing that would affect it.
Which one are you referring to? Numen
means a mind, literally a mind which is not hurt, meaning a mind which is not impaired by either an inner factor such as drugs, illness, or a strong emotion.
Inner facts.
Or an outer factor such as, you know, the perspective of the of where you are. Lo nimela nawa. Nawa means appears.
La to that mind?
Yeah.
Sorry, which one again?
La means two.
La means two, T-O. Nangwa means appear. Wang, you know. What's Wang mean?
Empowerment?
Yeah, empowerment, but here it means power. Literally, Wang means power. Okay, Wang Ki means by the power. Shaktam. Shak means established as existing. Established as existing. And tsam means just. What they say is that the Svatantrikas, I mean, it's a pretty nice system, of course. They say these flowers exist because two conditions are present. A, they are appearing to me. B, I established them with my mind.
Posit
is pretty good.
Perceive
is a little tough.
Identify them as such.
I'll give an example. And this is important. Okay, this is a classical example. This is actually, but it helps. They say you have to take the example of a magic show. A magic show. A magician putting on a show. And in India, if you've ever been there, There's this. It's called a Shingi Dyu in Tibetan, but it's a little stick like that. And the guy, if he's a real, you know, traditional magician, he throws the stick on the ground. He makes a spell. He says some holy word or something, and then you see an elephant or you see a cow or something. You see a horse. And all that's there is a stick, but because of his spell, you see a horse. But I mean, they used to do this sort of thing. You know, it can work. I've seen similar things. I haven't seen that exactly, but I've seen very similar things in India. I mean, they're very good magicians, but they can do a spell. They say some magic words, or they have some kind of a powder or something, and they throw the stick on the ground, and there's a horse.
And you saw a horse?
I didn't see exactly that, but I saw something similar. So
bees what?
It's like this. It's a kind of magic. I've seen them use this thing. I mean, I didn't see a horse. But they say that two conditions have to be present for that magic spell to work.
Sorry, you're talking about bee now, Michael?
What's bee?
You said in order for the flowers to exist first, I'm
not talking about
you're going to
I'm trying to
else.
Explain through a metaphor what they say. Basically, you have to have two things. The thing has to be appearing, yes. And you have to be perceiving it. How about if we say that?
Okay.
What two things have to be present?
The thing has to be appearing to you, and you have to be perceiving it. Those two conditions have to come together. It has to look like flowers, and I have to see it as flowers. Yeah. What would be the opposite of that? What they're saying is that for those flowers to exist, they have to look like flowers to me, they have to show flower to me, and I have to see them as flowers. I have to perceive them as flowers. What would be the opposite of that? Why do they make such a big deal about both things being present?
Well, if they're not there, and you don't see them as being there, that's the opposite.
Well, the opposite would be a lower kind of idea. What do normal people in the world say? How do those flowers exist? If I walk out of the room, do those flowers exist? Mm-hmm. According to Satantika, no.
Well, what about the Buddhas?
That's another story. But what I'm saying is that the tree in the forest question, according to Svatantrika, if I'm not perceiving it, it doesn't exist. And most Westerners, I mean, most normal people would say, the flowers are there. I mean, whether I'm here or not, whether anyone's perceiving them or not, whether there's any perception of them or not, the flowers are there.
Nothing exists. There are no appearances without a perception.
Say again?
So it's not referring to you. They're not saying they don't exist for you.
To you, no.
They don't exist at all.
Well, if
not relative to you, but at all.
No, not that. They don't say that. If there were no one to perceive them, if there were no one perceiving them, they couldn't be established as existing.
By any of those people or for any of those people that weren't there to perceive them.
Yeah, well, meaning everybody.
At all. Yeah. They wouldn't be at all.
But
nobody.
I thought this was the position of the highest.
Mind only.
Yeah. I thought this was the position of the...
Well, I enjoy it if you ask me, well, what's the difference between them and the Prasadika?
Okay.
We have to think about it. We have to talk about it. But what they're saying is two things have to be present. The flowers have to be appearing as flowers, and I have to be seeing them as flowers.
Why would you even need them to exist?
Because
at all?
According to your normal instincts, and according to your wrong state of mind, your Denzin, your tendency to grasp things as self-existent, there's a part of your mind that exists in your mind all the time, which truly believes that those flowers exist out there, independent of me perceiving them. You believe they exist over there. There's a part of your mind that truly believes that they are out there.
But the first part of this thing says that they are appearing to me, meaning they are there.
Now, they say this. They say something very interesting. They say they do exist out there, but they don't exist out there on their own. It's a difference. They call it the unique way of being and the way of being. They have a way of being on their own. Yeah. Those flowers have a way of being on their own. But it is not unique. They don't exist out there on their own. They do exist out there. Otherwise, they couldn't appear to me. They have some existence out there, but it's not out there, what?
Inherent.
On their own.
What does on their own
mean? Independently.
Independent of me. Providing my half of seeing them.
And so when you don't see them, they don't vanish. They're still there. They do vanish.
No.
They're not there.
They have no existence.
Yeah. They disappear.
So every time you walk beyond out of a room, the house me, disappears?
Beyond their appearing to me.
Crazy.
No. Well, they say, well, Buddha perceives that house. Or you perceive that house with your memory.
Oh, then it's just a function of memory.
Around the house, see it too. You don't have to see things directly. You can think them with your memory. You can perceive them with deduction.
So is the presence
and that's that's valid for them
somewhere in the universe.
Yeah, and by the way, the Buddha perceives all existence.
Right,
objects,
so it's all there.
Is that valid that for them as a?
Yeah, they would say that
perception.
Yeah, we're studying the book. We're studying is the study of omniscience.
Okay.
So it seems very important to me the definition to always qualify it that they appear to you.
Yeah. What would be the opposite? I mean, would be the thing for the thing to exist on its own. It does have its own existence, but that's not on its own.
It's not a God.
It's not in and of itself. It's not out there by itself. It requires my participation for it to exist. That's the difference.
What do you say would happen if, for instance, you woke up in the middle of the night, you were a little groggy, the flowers were there, the light was out, and you didn't perceive them as flowers, you perceived them as some other object.
Beautiful question, beautiful question. Lo nu me. The grogginess is an internal factor.
That would be an impairment.
Good question.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good question, yeah.
So the Madhyamika Prasangika position says that the way in which we perceive that the nature of things depends upon the way in which we perceive it and label it.
Are we talking Satantika or Prasangika?
Well, I'm asking the difference.
Oh, I was afraid somebody would start that.
It seems to me they're the same.
They are different. I don't want to get into it too much. I mean, Rinpoche also told me don't confuse them. This is natural. Very similar in many ways. But remember that in Prasangika, the emphasis was on a suitable collection of parts and a state of mind which was also suitable, giving it the name of that thing and the concept of that thing. It's a little bit different. But it's very useful. You can see how all the lower school's ideas of how things exist around you are very useful and how they're leading up to Prasangika. They're almost not like, technically they are contradictory, but they're almost like flowing into Madhyamika. You know, they may be ultimately wrong, but they certainly are a nice way to get into the Prasangika viewpoint. And also I think the Yogacara, the mind-only school, is very, very interesting and very close to setting your mind into the right mood of seeing the real position. But this is, I like this position. The other part of this, which I'm not going to write here, is that's the whole thing. I can't overload you. But the second part is, it exists. The first part is, it exists through appearing to you, and your mind not affected perceiving it. It exists through those two things. It does not exist through some way of being out there on its own. That's the second part of what they say. What they are denying, we can say it, okay? It does not.
Is this the, would you say the translation for La Nian Wang Di?
No.
I mean, to put it into plain English, simple English.
And that's just dependent.
They say it does exist out there, or else it couldn't fulfill the requirement of appearing to us.
And you said it's dependent origination?
Yeah. It's dependent origination is that those two things are present. It's appearing to me as flowers, and I'm seeing it as flowers. Those two conditions have met. Therefore, there are flowers here. But It doesn't exist on its own, but it does exist out there.
Depends on those two things.
Well, almost it's the first thing. See? Existing out there is its appearing. It's existing out there is it is part of that component of its appearing to me. Okay? If it didn't exist out there, there wouldn't be anything to appear to me in the first half of the two components.
Aren't you then inferring that it does exist out there?
It does exist out there. I'm saying it does exist out there according to the
intent of your perception.
But not on its own. No.
Can you explain like a wave and the radio receiver and the wave that go to the radio and then mm-hmm. it's come up the...
Yeah, you can say that. The wave is appearing to the...
Yeah, it has to
the
be
receptor,
receiver,
and the
yeah.
receptor has to be there also.
Right.
Yeah, like that. That's okay. That's a nice example. So, what is it in their school for something to exist self-existently? If it exists out there on its own, without depending on these two things happening, appearing to me and me seeing it. Anything that could exist the opposite way of that would be what?
Gotcha.
Self-existent. Gotcha. That's gotcha. Yeah, I'll say it again. Because like two people got it. The way it really does exist deceptively and conventionally is that it appears to me and I see it. The way it doesn't exist... Wait. is out there on its own. And that's it. That's the gotcha. Anything that could exist out there on its own is a gotcha. That's a self-existent thing.
Which is the way we see
which
most
is
things.
The way you're... We're going to get to that.
Is there anything that is gakcha?
Gakcha doesn't exist, but if it did exist, it would be a tissue that exists out there on its own, independent of my perceptions.
What about emptiness?
That's a different thing. Emptiness is the absence of the gakcha. Emptiness is the fact that nothing exists out there on its own.
But isn't there an existence of emptiness?
Sure. The fact that nothing exists out there on its own exists. The fact that there's no elephant in this room exists.
Right? But that's not a gakcha.
Not at all.
That
we accept that.
Is not
right.
Speaking of material things, nothing exists then.
Whoa.
Everything exists.
Yeah, no, that's right. There's sort of a definitional tautology in there where... not to waste your time. Anyway, it's
but the thing is,
slippery.
So you perceive those things around you. That's fine. That's not. We're not negating that. We're not negating that the flower appears to you and you see it. That's fine. That's the way the flower exists, conventionally. Okay. You see that, but if I ask you. But by the way, that's what's really going on. But if I ask you what's going on, you would say, "Oh yeah, the flower's out there." It's not part of my eye or part of my brain or whatever. It's out there on its own.
You're saying it's out there independent, not depending
yeah,
on me.
Yeah, on its own. Yeah, independent of me. It's out there. It exists over there. Independent of my perceptions. Independent of my mind. Independent of my mental images. It exists over there, out there on its own. That's grasping to self-existence. That's ignorance. You don't always think that. You don't get up in the morning and drink your coffee and sit there and look at the coffee and say, gee, the coffee's out there on its own. But it's always assumed. It's always in your mind. It's always in the back of your mind. So I ask you, oh, so the state of mind which is holding the coffee cup, is that wrong? Is there a coffee cup?
No. Yes.
Yes.
But we didn't get there yet.
Okay. So, Michael, let's say that there's a planet that nobody's discovered yet, that nobody has any concept of. Does it exist by
according to
definition?
Buddhism, the definition of existence, and this is off the subject, okay, you don't have to write this down, is that which is perceived by a mind which is not messed up with if any state of mind or any consciousness can be aware of the thing in any method, don't forget deduction, then the thing exists.
Let's say nobody's even...
The Buddha is
no scientist. Oh, so...
The Buddha
because there's so many Buddhas, yeah. They're always there.
It doesn't it take so many, always. It just takes one.
Right. There's at least one.
Yeah.
He's always perceiving
he's
everything.
He's omniscient, yeah. At every second he's perceiving everything, past, future, present, all universes he perceives at one moment. Therefore those things exist.
But if you say that...
Even things which no other being is aware of.
If the coffee cup doesn't exist without me perceiving it, isn't that very... It sounds very selfish to me that nothing can exist that I can't see. It seems like the opposite. That seems very self-grasping.
No. All they're saying is that the coffee cup... you are contributing to the existence of the coffee cup.
But if everybody else was in the room and the coffee cup was here and I left... I'm saying because I leave the coffee cup doesn't exist. That sounds
no, they didn't say that.
No. We are already
the coffee
didn't cups. Say that. The coffee cup still exists. Someone is still seeing the coffee cup.
Oh, it doesn't have to be you.
No.
Anybody.
No.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But this is where you're confused.
That's our question because there are Buddhas in the universe who perceive all things that exist. Therefore, those things exist.
What you're saying, though, right? Is
things that no man will ever see. You know, a little dirt cloud on the other side of Pluto. You know, it's there because the Buddha perceives it.
But what you're saying, if I understand it correctly, is just that that coffee cup no longer exists for her because she's left the room. She's not thinking about it.
No.
She's not seeing it. Da-da-da-da-da.
No, she has a remembrance of it. She has it. That is also a kind of l'anime, her memory of it.
So once you perceive,
so all our mental functions are. I mean, all our thinkings
don't think
are
that direct
part
perception
of it.
Is the only way to perceive something. We're going to study that a lot. You know, deduction, belief of an authoritative person, things like that. Those are all ways to perceive something. So I ask you again. So I'll go around the room and check. So, Fran.
The answer is yes.
I always start on the left. It's lucky. According to this hotel. What are the two things that have to be present for me to perceive those flowers?
That I have to perceive it, and the one before that I'm going
to. And they have to appear to me.
And they have to appear there.
From their job is to appear to me. My job is to see them. Okay. If both of us are doing our job, they exist.
Why do we have to say we or the I? Wouldn't it be better if we said
everybody.
Someone?
Everybody. Okay, somebody.
That's what's confusing everybody
okay.
here.
So, Nina,
anyone.
If I'm being very insistent and I'm saying there must be two things there, it has to be appearing to me and I have to be seeing it for it to exist, who am I trying to argue with? What do other people think? What do people think who never heard about all this? If I say, how does that, those flowers exist?
They're crazy.
they would say they exist, what?
They exist independently of you.
Yeah, out there on their own. Yeah.
Okay. Self-existent.
Yeah, okay. That's what we're trying to deny. That is gacha. Anything that could exist out there on its own is what we deny in this school.
I got some really strong gacha going here. Maybe, you know, my mind keeps saying, well, they're in the field, they're growing. I've never seen them. Certainly they're growing.
The Buddha sees them. And you're seeing them right now by deduction. Right now you're seeing by deduction a field from which these flowers came, which you deduce, probably correctly, that there are other similar flowers growing there. And you have a mental picture of this field with the flowers, and there's a little 1 foot hole in them because someone pulled out these flowers. Yeah. That's a perception. That's fine.
Yeah, my point is that past doesn't spring to reality just because I all of a sudden deduced it at this moment in time.
It does if your deduction is airtight, which it's not. You know, if it were airtight, you could say that they really do exist. But you know, we don't really know. Maybe this field was gone. Maybe they plowed it under. You know, maybe these were grown in a greenhouse. Your deduction is not airtight. I mean, your perception right now of the field from which these flowers grew is probably slightly faulty because. You're making there are so many
assumptions. Yeah.
What do you call it? There's so many variables in this picture that we can't really be sure what the place looked like where these flowers came from. But we can be sure with airtight deduction that there was some kind of earth that was watered and there was some heat. You can deduce that perfectly, correctly. There was those things. There was a place like that. And you are perceiving it, and it is appearing to you. Yeah. And therefore it exists.
My point is, I just deduced it at this moment in time. Right. So, but it just didn't spring to reality and happen just because I deduced it at this moment
in
time.
Get away from the eye. Somebody has.
Somebody
the
did.
Buddha
the
has.
Person who grew the flowers did. Right? But then it existed. It exists.
As long as anybody does.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
Right. What is the deduct?
Deduct means... I hear the dog barking. So I think that man must have walked outside. I can't see the man. But the dogs are barking, so I can think, oh, there, the dogs are barking, so the guy must be outside. There must be some guy there. So I am seeing that guy, but only by deduction. I'm not seeing him with my eyes. I'm seeing him in my mind. And it's dangerous. Deductions are more dangerous than direct perception. Because maybe he's not there. Maybe something else happened. Maybe the other dog...
Not with a gun and shoot somebody who's coming to give you a pie.
You mean like imagine? Deduction? You're just thinking about it?
Deduction means perceiving something because you have a good reason. Perceiving something with your mind because you have a good reason. The good reason is what? The dog is barking. Then what do I see? I see some man walking.
It's an educated guess.
Okay, awful quiet. Maybe you need to take a break. Take a break, and then we'll...
Just eat some cookies.
And then what he's going to do is what the book does is they give a common example. They give a metaphor. They're going to talk about a magic show and how the thing happens. And that'll help a lot for you to understand what he's talking about. I remember
everybody uses the magic show sample.
Right? It's a good one.
Yeah. Well, it appears in a. It comes from a scriptural source. That's why people use it. Different people explain it different ways. Okay, take a break. Have some. I think there's turkey soup.
Have some non-existent
turkey leftovers.
Gotcha.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's where gotcha came from.
What do you think?
We say the old traditional magic show, which probably no one's seen in a long time.
No, this is real magic.
The way that we know of it.
Okay, so that's... So they say there has to be two things going on. What are they?
Well, there has to be an audience.
No, for the horse, for the appearance of the horse to be there, what has to be going on? For you to see a horse, what has to go on?
The spell?
The wood has to appear as a horse, and...
You
have to see it as a horse.
So you're saying the basis and the perceiver.
There has to be something appearing as a horse, and then there has to be a state of mind that thinks it sees a horse.
But that appearing, I thought you said that existed, but...
Now wait, let me go one more step, and then see if it answers what you're saying. Okay. They say... If the Svatantrikas said, in their example, they said, if the thing were not appearing as a horse, then what?
You wouldn't see it.
What was it? Then everything could appear as a horse.
What?
If it didn't take the piece of wood if the piece of wood didn't have to be there to appear as a horse, then you would see horses everywhere where there wasn't any piece of wood also.
Right. Let's go back here. Say
okay,
that again.
So if seeing this horse didn't depend on this looking like a horse, then everything you looked at would look like a horse to you. Therefore, they say, the first component is very necessary. It's necessary for the flowers to appear as flowers. If me seeing flowers didn't depend on those flowers appearing as flowers, then everything I looked at would seem to be flowers.
Mm-hmm. Assuming you
so there must be something in the object that looks like flowers. That's what they're... I guess let's boil it down to that. There has to be something out there that is appearing as a flower. Otherwise, everything would appear like a flower.
Or everything could appear like a flower.
Should appear. Why not? If it didn't take any flowerness out there for the thing to appear as a flower, then everything I look at would be a flower.
So then you derive that something in there has to look like a flower for it to look like a flower?
Right, they say there must be something flower about it out there, or else everything would appear like a flower.
Assuming that you have an unimpaired, that the perceiver is as an unimpaired consciousness.
But so it exists, but not of its own.
Right, right. Where they're saying, they keep saying there have to be two conditions going on here. There has to be something flower out there. Or if I could see flowers without any seeing flowerish out there, then I could see flowers everywhere.
Not necessarily.
Which we want
to do.
Not necessarily.
Which we
want to
do.
Who said not necessarily?
I don't know.
Why? Why do you say that?
Because you may just mistake the object.
We're talking new myth.
Correct perception.
I want to make sure I got this right. You're the first class I teach in. Yeah. Good. Are you alright? If I didn't need the appearance of the piece of wood to see a horse, if there didn't have to be a stick there to appear as a horse, then everything I look at could appear as a horse.
That example seems more confusing than that.
It's a very tough example.
But it's
a
good, though.
Because there's a lot of other things going on.
Because there's the magic.
There's no horse.
Right, that's tough.
So then it's
that's
part of that, yeah. That thing.
It's not
going to the first part of that then appearing to me doesn't apply to that situation because there isn't a thing that it has
something.
Horse-ness or whatever. It,
right,
but
you're
it's
right.
Only, it's
you're
only
right.
What you've been,
right.
It's only what's in your mind.
Mm. In that case, you have an impaired mind.
If it's only what's in your mind, then he wouldn't need the stick. He's turning the stick, he's doing a spell on your eyes, and then the stick is appearing as a horse. But it's not only depending on, there has to be a stick out there to appear as a horse. Yeah, you can say that it should have been appearing as a stick. That's a little confusing. The point is that there is something out there to appear as a horse.
Well, first it appears as a stick, and then he makes a spell, and then it
right.
appears as a horse.
Right.
So it's like...
Right. Okay. So, suppose the second condition weren't there. What's the second condition?
You're seeing it as a horse.
Why we'll get into later. If that weren't there, then what's the problem?
And how would you know it was flowers?
He
how
says
would anybody
here,
know it was flowers?
It's not flowers, it's a horse.
But everybody sees
why
the
not
thing.
A duck?
What you need is the state of mind under a spell to see the horse. What if the state of mind under a spell wasn't there? What would happen?
See a stick.
It's
then
stick.
The state of mind.
What happens when somebody else walks up later who wasn't there when the spell was cast?
See a stick.
All these people are running away from this horse, and he's saying, "Well, what's going on? There's just a stick there." So they say you need the state of mind which sees it also, which is under the spell.
Excuse me. Yes. How important is the stick in this thing? I mean,
the
yeah,
stick
I mean,
is 50%.
Stick.
The stick has to be appearing mm-hmm. as a horse.
It can't just be
poof. There's a horse without a stick, right?
No, no, this is the concept of emanation in magic, is that you need to work with something, that you make the thing... This is just a principle of old Indian magic. You know, you got to have a thing that you cast a spell on everybody and they see the thing as a horse. There must be something out there, otherwise you can't cast a spell. What are they going to see as a horse?
Keep on, Michael, wasn't it... What's
this
name?
Is the idea of chukku, of emanation. There has to be something to appear as a thing. You know, this wicked old witch is trying to show herself as a beautiful lady because she has some spell. But there has to be the wicked old witch there.
But if you just sit in meditation in a cave for enough years, you create a chukku without anything.
No.
Yeah, what about Milarepa?
What are you talking about?
What? What I'm saying is spell without being there.
I'm not talking about religious. Okay, just like, I'm talking about when a person can make himself appear as a bird.
Okay, so.
Or a person can make himself appear as a fox. There has to be a person to appear as a fox.
Sure.
As a bird. That's true. So there has to be some material that appears as a thing. So now we got three people involved in this thing. Does the magician see the horse?
No.
Yeah, maybe.
Depends
sure,
on
he was there when the spell was cast.
Oh, but he knows it's not a horse.
So he doesn't believe it. Now we're getting a very interesting thing. Okay. Now we're to the interesting part.
He sees it, but he doesn't believe it.
We're talking about three different people here. Let's talk first about the spectators, who were there when the spell was cast. That's the first person we want to talk about. The people who were there when the spell was cast. Do they see a horse?
Yes.
Do they believe there's a horse there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. They believe the stick has turned into a horse.
Except for the magician, right.
They believe there's a horse there, and they see a horse there. Sound familiar?
Yes.
So they wouldn't be able to... have the horse appear unless they believed it.
No.
That's not true, because the second person we're going to talk about is the magician himself. Does he see a horse? Was he there when the spell was cast?
He sees a horse, but he doesn't believe
he
it.
He sees it, but he knows there's no such thing there. Okay, it's an illusion. He knows it's an illusion. He cast a spell. He was there when the holy words were spoken. We're going to talk about, by the way, how that's supposed to be able to work. No, we will. It's the last subject of this class. A mantra. It's actually a mantra. The word mantra comes from those old days. He can say some special words, and then everyone in the place will see a horse. How can that happen? We can talk about it. So he's also heard the words, and he also sees a horse. But he knows it's not real. So now you've got two kinds of people. One is the spectators who were there when the spell was cast. They see a horse, and they believe the horse is there. Then you have the magician. He was there when the spell was cast. He sees a horse, but
he
doesn't believe it's real. Now what about Joe Blow, who walks up 10 minutes later after the spell was cast, and he sees all this big... In India, it's great. You see this big ring of people. You know what's going on. There's a magician in the middle of the crowd. You know, you're always trying to get in to see what he's doing. You know? And so you get in later, and you look down there, and he's going like this, and there's a stupid little stick on the ground, and everybody's going, you know. That's the third person. Does he see a horse?
No.
Does he believe in the horse?
No.
No. Now, who do you think those three people correspond to?
Spectators. Regular sentient beings. The magician is beings who perceived emptiness, who intellectually understand emptiness.
Well, we'll talk about it. The first people, you're right, are people who have not perceived emptiness. The book doesn't say directly. Okay? So you can explain it either way. But basically, someone who has no idea of emptiness, he sees things as self-existent, and he believes they are. I'm sorry, the book does say, it does say self-existent. A person who has not perceived emptiness directly. He sees it as self-existent, and he believes it is self-existent. He's like the person who was there when the spell was cast, the spectator.
Oh, don't do that.
Then, the second one, the magician is... The example they give in the book is someone at the three last bhumis. That's the ninth, right?
8 to 10.
Oh, that was a kind of bodhicitta. No, we're just talking 8, 9, 10. Okay, bhumis.
Bhumis,
eight,
that
nine,
is B-O-O-H-E-S?
B-H-U-M-I.
Oh, dear.
B-H-U-M-I. But don't worry about it. Base. According to the book, they see things as self-existent, but they don't believe it. That's not what I told you.
Right.
But this is Svatantrika.
Would we fall into that category?
I'm still researching what the Prasangika is. Huh? Svatantrika.
Would we fall into that category?
What did I say?
Prasangika. Oh. Yeah, but I adjust it now. I mean, this is clearly, the book clearly says that at this point, that those people on that stage, bodhisattvas on the last three bodhisattva levels see, but they don't believe it. When they are not in emptiness meditation.
When they're not?
This is when they're walking around after their...
They don't have any cognition.
We're going to talk about that.
They experience this when they're
not... I'm saying people on the last three bhumis who are not in direct perception of emptiness see things as self-existent, but don't believe it. They know they're wrong.
Michael, can I ask you a question?
Say one more time.
Yes, thank you.
What?
Would we fall into that category?
Probably not, if you haven't seen emptiness directly.
So you must have seen the emptiness directly then.
Sure, this is a very high level. Just before Buddhahood.
Low.
Push the top left hand button.
Yeah. Just go to that. Hello? Hi.
Mr. Staddy?
Yeah, okay. Okay. I'm on hold.
I'm on hold.
It's probably about Tantrika. Okay, so it's those...
Yes. You still have less people back on the way.
So it's someone who will perceive the emptiness in deep meditation and it comes out of it and knows that what they're seeing. That's the one
wrong.
Who cannot help himself.
Right, right. Despite himself.
Despite himself.
Right. He doesn't believe it. He's the magician.
Yeah.
Magician, he knows there's no horse there, but he can't help it. He sees a horse.
And the newcomer.
Now how about the newcomer? What did I say
not
last
not the Buddha. The Buddha sees the stick and the horse because
doesn't
he sees
have
the way everybody
good.
Else sees.
Good. You know, I was wondering why it wasn't the Buddha, and that's a pretty good reason why not. Yeah, he sees the stick and the horse.
Yeah, the Buddha seeing
the
it
horse?
As a stick would not depend on them
so
not having
see,
been there when
who doesn't
the
see either? Who is it that doesn't see either? Who doesn't believe there's a horse and doesn't see a horse either? Who is the guy who came later? All he sees is a big crowd.
Meditation.
No, exactly. Precisely. It's a person who's in the direct perception of emptiness.
Indirect.
And they say a non-Buddha who's in the direct perception of emptiness.
Yeah.
What?
Sorry,
in a person
a non-Buddha sentient being, a non-Buddha living being who's perceiving emptiness directly.
Well, that's not even necessary because the Buddha doesn't have to go into a state of meditation to perceive emptiness directly.
That's true.
Doesn't see the stick.
But they
either.
Call it a state of meditation. They call it.
It's
always
emptiness.
In meditation. The same way. They are like the spectator who came later. They don't see things as self-existent and they don't believe things as self-existent.
So the moment that they're looking at the stick, they are perceiving actually emptiness. Is that what you're saying? It's like perceiving emptiness at the moment.
I don't know.
Stretch
it. I don't think you can. I don't think you can stretch the metaphor.
I mean, it's like a parallel. It will be the same.
Broken stick.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They don't go farther than that. They just want to compare those
two
people.
The first two are the
best. They don't talk about
the person in the crowd who sees both the stick and
the deception that's going on. I believe my feeling is that you could say that. The spell is our tendency to see things as self-existent. What do you think?
Proceeds, mostly.
It is Dong Zin. It is the ignorance.
Yeah.
It is ignorance.
It's really exaggerated.
It makes you think that something's there and it's not there. But the perception is not ignorance. It's seeing a horse. But that's another
thing.
Yeah.
Seeing a horse, but then taking it one step further and believing that you're really seeing a horse are two different things in this case, right?
So,
yeah, but seeing a stick.
So we'll recap. Does the flower is the vase with the flower what we deny exists?
No.
Because it everything is okay. It's appearing as flowers, and I'm seeing it as flowers, and my mind is not messed up. I'm not drunk. I'm not hallucinating. Normal state of mind. And those flowers are appearing to me, therefore the flowers exist. If the flowers, any flower which could exist out there on its own without my participation is
Gotcha.
Would be Gaksha, because that's the opposite of the way it really exists.
Without okay. any love.
Right, okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay? And that's what they say the Gaksha, that's what Gaksha is. Gaksha means the thing we deny. So how does it apply to your real life? I say that whenever you have an emotion which would cause you to do something wrong, it is aimed at a Gaksha.
Oh, nice.
It is directed at a thing that doesn't even exist. And the proof of that is, you know, when someone comes up to you and says, so-and-so is bad, he's a bad person. And you say, well, he's, I kind of like him. And I say, no, he's bad. His nature is bad. Then I say, well, how can I like him? Does he have a good nature and a bad nature at the same time? Or am I not seeing... Normally the person will say, oh, you don't perceive the truth. He's really bad. And you just haven't seen what he's done to me. That's ignorance. And it's only that state of mind that believes itself that can have anger. Because if you understood that he's what?
Definitely.
Blank. He's blank. He's a blank screen. If you understood that, then you can't get angry at him because you know who's projecting. Who makes him better?
You are.
You are. Well, you want to shoot yourself in the toe, it's okay. But don't shoot him. It's not his fault. He's blank.
So you can still get angry, you just need to change the focus of the anger to yourself.
Well, if you're going
to
get anger, the only proper anger, which is called regret, is sadness. You're thinking, well, why did I do that?
You're pissed at yourself, too.
You're pissed in a way that you're kind of... To be pissed would be seeing yourself as self-existent in a way. It's just this kind of calm sadness about that I messed up, therefore I'm having to see this thing. And by goodness, so now that I know, understand Buddhism, I absolutely will not respond in the normal way, because that's exactly what would make me see him again, what would force me to see him again.
Just going with what you define, though, as the dependence of this thing, you have the two components, the thing out there, and you perceiving them with an unimpaired mind. You could have a person out there, you could be perceiving them as bad. Two components are there. You can still have that anger, badness, whatever. Just from the base definition, it seems to me.
Let me think about it. I know what you're saying. According to Sautantrika...
Yeah, and you're sort of adding on all the other stuff outside of this definition.
He's bad out there. No, I can't... Once I admit my participation, I can't be angry.
You could say I perceive him as bad. It's my perception.
Which I've caused.
Perception is different, so
oh, but aren't you adding on to the definition where what the cause of the perception is? That's outside the definition.
What's making me see the flowers?
What's causing your perception?
Of the flowers. Yeah that's why you have to throw in a little yoga chart.
Yeah.
Which is accepted by the other school. That part of the yoga chart is accepted by everybody. The same seed is creating that appearance and it's creating my perception. The same karmic seed is creating both. That's their main point. So Gaksha, the benefit of Gaksha is that you can't be angry anymore, because the thing you're angry at, if what I'm saying is very interesting, if you can get anger or if you can get desire, particularly to the point that you would hurt someone to get away or to get something, you're focused on a thing that doesn't even exist. Whatever you want or whatever you hate doesn't even exist. And that's the way that emptiness can help you. Not to believe that he doesn't exist or anything else. Obviously he exists. Mm-hmm. You know, the Buddhism doesn't say try to pretend that this asshole, excuse me, at work doesn't exist. You can pretend that all you want, and he's still going to be there the next day. And that's obvious, so why knock your head out over this idea of emptiness that says he doesn't exist? Because the next day when you go to work, he's still going to be there. You know, that's not the point. He's blank. You're forced by your pastimes to see him as the way you do. And if you don't like it, then stop doing bad deeds. Don't try to hurt him.
Okay.
The way they identify the flowers is that it has a characteristic of being about this large, and it has this pink color, and it doesn't wiggle a lot, and
that's
maybe it has
parts.
A perfume. And the way I perceive your boss is that he's about yay tall, and he's a little overweight, and he's got this weird look on his face, and he keeps yelling. Now, yeah. What is it about him that doesn't exist?
Any yellingness or any ugliness to me, which is not coming about through my own perceptions. And that's exactly what Satanta is trying
sorry,
to say.
I'm sorry, I need you to say that again, please. So
they're trying to say he's not independent of my perceptions of him.
No, but you've asserted that the flower exists, and we've asserted that your boss exists.
There is an existence of my boss out there.
But he's also yelling.
Wait, right, he's yelling, but it can't exist without my participation.
Well,
so if you weren't there, you wouldn't be yelling. What's your problem?
So this is potentially very elucidating, and I think there's a very slender something here that will really illuminate it all, and I wish that you could pursue it, because identify the flowers by characteristics that it's you know, the sociologists call it perception type of thing.
No, it's,
and
it,
so
that's
we identify
exactly
your boss
you
by
do.
His disagreeable behavior. Even though I've never met this person, I now understand that he makes everyone think he's disagreeable.
No, there is no
or we
such
all
person.
Make
I'm just using the example.
Right.
In fact, there is no such person in this particular, in my particular job. But anyway, I'm just saying.
So, let's get one thing.
So how, the stick has an existence, the flower has an existence, and the boss has an existence.
Oh, no, he looks angry and I see him as angry.
So,
that's fine, and
so,
he's an angry man.
But, okay, and
but
he
he's
has
not really angry. He's a horse. He appears to be a horse because of the spell, and I see him as a horse because of the spell. But he's
when he really becomes
a
stick again, what is
he's
he?
He's not
then?
Really an angry man by himself.
When he becomes a stick, what is he?
He's not permanently angry.
Just a
then I stop getting angry, and then I don't do any bad deeds, and then I reach nirvana.
And it doesn't matter what
and
he is.
He stops yelling?
Is the answer.
No, he goes on yelling
yes.
at somebody else.
What about like Li Pei?
Sure.
The trouble with it's all not coming
know, what
from
about
you. You keep saying he's blank. He's not blank. There is something there. It may be very subtle.
Oh.
Can you identify
no,
what it is that
now
exists?
I've got a question. I mean, there is a redness of his face. There
it
is a
big, wide
there
mouth.
Is a loud volume, louder than normal. Okay. But that it's an angry man, it can't be that until I see it that way.
Well, what
sorry.
Is it that you have imputed to it
he
that
he
isn't
happening?
He
could be singing a chorale, you know. If I had the karma to see it that way, he would be.
But don't That's isn't there this concept of there being some sort of a consensus?
In fact, by
valid,
the way, what I just said, what I just said is how I can change reality. It's how I can reach nirvana. If it weren't the way I just described it, nirvana is impossible.
Could it be not,
and in particular, secret Buddhism is impossible.
But wouldn't it be possible, let's say, if you saw somebody angry, right? But it did not affect you. I mean, like, your boss was yelling at you, but it did not faze you. You know, really, you really...
His Holiness gave a good example. He said, if you see a guy comes up with two fruits, I read this in some article somewhere. Comes up with two fruits, and one is kind of moldy and one is really bright and fresh. And he takes the bright and clean one and he gives you the moldy one. What he said was something like, you wouldn't really have any sense of injustice if you didn't care about the fruit. Mm. You know, I mean, if you weren't attached to the eating it, you might not even see the difference.
So then the relevance
but that's attachment,
of the power...
But if you're
no,
talking about...
You see the difference, but it wouldn't matter.
Yeah, but you may see somebody who's angry,
well,
but it's not going to affect you.
If you have a boss who screams at you,
yeah.
But it doesn't push your buttons...
Right, exactly.
That's your karma. You have the karma to see something a little bit unpleasant, but you don't have the karma to have a very bad experience all day.
So is that person a nasty person?
Of course
then?
He is.
So
he's slightly nasty.
So, but you say he exists because you see it.
You're talking the difference between making
sure.
a value judgment and.
No, I mean, if you want to get deeper, even the fact that he's there which is not what I want to get into right now, but even the fact that he exists,
is your call.
Even the fact that the redness and the loudness are there. See, you go down to each level.
So is it equally one is true he being, that objects other than sentient beings have the same...
Sure. This house, I mean, you can think this is a very nasty area, or you can think it's a great area because it has a Dharma center here. It's emptiness of this house.
I waver.
I
need to hear one thing again. You said he's blank. I'm forced by my past deeds to see him this way. If I don't like it, then...
Be good. Because you cannot change the current condition. Mm-hmm. It's a result. That's a principle of Buddhism. Mm-hmm. You cannot change the result.
So you
have to plant new causes.
So you're good to avoid having this happen in the future.
Right. Uh-huh. Self-interested morality.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
But don't think that Buddhism ever said, Buddhism doesn't say that once the sprout came out of the earth, that you can, get back down there, get back in there, It's ridiculous. It will never happen. Once you're suffering, it's too late to do anything. All you can do is work about the future.
So, are you
saying... And that's this big misconception that Buddhists, if he's a good Buddhist... And he meditates real good, and then the next time somebody yells at him, he can stay calm or something like that. It's not the point.
No.
I want a world where no one ever yells at me. So I don't have to stay calm about it. And it will come. Because I'll be good.
I have a question. How can you fight injustice if you don't perceive evil? Okay,
you see
Hitler, and you say, oh, he's all right, I'm not going to let him get to me, so he murders 6 million people, he's too calm, he's too go. Or like Liu Ping. If you're so neutral to it and you don't respond to anything with any anger, how are you going to fight anything?
That's what the idea of lower nirvana is. That's the difference between that and Buddhahood. Okay, so Buddhahood, the point is that once you reach nirvana, even if you wanted to suffer, you couldn't. Whatever Li Pengs or Hitlers there are in the universe, whatever they can do will never affect you. It can never cause any suffering. Are you aware that they exist and that they're hurting other people and that other people have the karma to have Hitler kill them? Yes. And you fight against that, but you fight against it by teaching him morality.
And now you just cast Hitler as this evil character and it's all coming from you.
The Buddha is aware of how sentient beings see. I read this, there's this biography on that disc about Hitler's girlfriend who made movies and she loved him.
Leni Riefenstahl.
Yeah, come on.
Well, there are always a few people.
No, the Buddha is never affected by the Hitlers of the universe. He cannot
but
be.
He sees
cannot
them.
He perceives you perceiving them hurting you. Yes. And he'll do whatever he can do that you don't have to have them hurt you anymore.
But he sees them as being equal to you.
He still sees them. If you couldn't discriminate between things that were harmful
I didn't say
and
that.
Things that were...
I didn't say that. They'll never harm you.
But if you talk about an angry man, that angry man is potentially harmful. Just because you don't get angry back doesn't make him less angry.
Oh, should you take steps to restrain a person who is harmful? Of course. That's a good deed.
But then you have to acknowledge that he's angry, that it's not all coming from your... Do you see what I mean?
If you can perceive that he's hurting someone else, yes, you have to do something.
Or intends to hurt you.
But how can you really prevent him from hurting someone else? This is the only... No, I tell you again, and I'll tell you many times before the 5 years are over. Maybe after that. If I lie in a diamond negotiation, and the guy takes the bait, and he sells it to me too cheap, what caused me to profit?
Something in your past life.
Yeah, good can never come from bad, period. You hear it 1,000 times, one day it will dawn on you. It's impossible that a bad action would ever create any good result. It's impossible that a good action can ever have a bad result.
No, but the result...
So, if this angry man that you talk about is harming someone else, it had to have come about through some harm that that person did. So, is me killing him going to stop the harm to the other person? Is me killing that person Does that stop the source of the harm to the other person?
No.
It postpones it.
No, they'll have it again. They'll need it again.
It doesn't necessarily postpone it. It could just happen the next second
well,
anyway.
Well, then why did the story about the
ship captain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He killed him for his own benefit, for that guy's benefit.
Right, well, that's the other question, too, and the same thing. Well, wouldn't it prevent them from accumulating that karma?
If he's got the karma to kill that many people, it was just being postponed.
Then you're just putting it off, huh?
No, they had the karma to have the Buddha kill the man before they died because of him.
Yeah, but the guy who was killed...
He didn't have the karma to be killed by the man.
They were saved.
Going back to the example of
the Cuban... No, it's the truth. And again, it's one of those things...
You can say if 5 ran out there and grabbed a child who was running around out in the street, you might say, well... You didn't save that child. It was that child's karma not to get run over.
In fact, it must be. It can never be anything else. Yes.
So then where does the
if you well, say there's any
helping
other...
helping come in?
No, so if you say there's any other... Well, why does medicine
well, if it wasn't you, it would have been someone
why
else.
Why does medicine work? Who was it? Somebody in this room. Their uncle was killed by a dentist.
Oh.
No, I mean, he shot too much and stuff and he died on his chair. Now, why does medicine work for some people and kill other people? You want a self-existent goodness in the medicine. It's not true.
So how do we determine then that helping someone is a benefit? You know, if we see this person who's going to go kill that person, and we go to intervene, we can say,
so your motivation is
killed by that person. Therefore, why should I intervene?
Oh, because we're accumulating virtue for ourselves.
Mainly. Yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound very.
It sounds selfish. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. I know people have said that, but that's the way it works. You must help them.
For your own benefit.
In fact, the main benefit is for you. This is why Lama, if you want to know what Rinpoche would say at this point, he'd say, look, the helping is obviously a factor in the person being saved. You know, your presence and your making an effort is obviously contributing to the person's being saved. It's not the main cause why the person is saved. Mm. Because some people you help get hurt anyway, and some people you help get helped. Therefore, it's not your helping that's the main cause for them getting help.
So the
because if it were, every time you help someone, it would come out good. It is a factor, certainly. You know? It contributes, obviously. And if you didn't do it, it wouldn't happen.
And so in terms of helping them, we're not really helping them to benefit them. We're helping them to benefit ourselves.
Well, the result is that it benefits you.
But that essentially then is...
What is their motivation? The motivation is this. I should help them. The main reason is that I can become a Buddha, because then I can really help people. Because then I can read their minds. I can teach them exactly what they need. I can appear any way, anytime, without any effort.
Karma, right?
Exactly the way they need.
You still can't change their karma.
No. You can teach them.
To change their future karma.
Well, you can teach.
Yeah, but will they be actually learning, or will it just be their karma to see you and respond favorably? I mean,
they're not contradictory.
So then when you see the boss who's the jerk, I'm not going to use your word, but when you see the boss who's the jerk, okay,
well, if
you don't respond negatively, you know, if you don't get angry yourself in return, is that free will taking advantage of what you've learned, or is that just inevitable, you've got the karma to see this angry boss, but simultaneously have the karma not to be angry? Or is it both of those things at the same time?
You have the karma that the teachings affect you to the point where you do the intelligent thing at that moment.
So it could have gone either way. Depends on whether you utilize the teaching that you...
Well, that's what the Lama
said. Free will does come in.
Well, he said something about Saddam Hussein.
Where
also.
Does the free will come from?
Right.
Karma.
He said Saddam Hussein was probably a bad man, but his heart went out to him because we supplied him with all those arms.
Right.
What were we doing? What were we thinking? And
did he say that? Abortion. Yeah. He can understand people killing? I mean, having abortion? I don't understand that.
I don't
think under certain circumstances.
I don't think that's... I don't even think under certain circumstances. Frankly, I don't think so. I've never seen that in any...
What is it? So he talks about it. I don't know if you read it. Did you read Yaakov, Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it talks, you know, it sounds like from what I read,
It talks about abortion. I don't know where. I can't remember where, but.
That's why I have a problem with this free will concept in karma, you know, because ultimately the free will is from the karma.
We'll study it. The Abhidharma is saying that there is a will which is not a result of karma.
Then not everything is a result of karma.
That's true.
Thank you.
So therefore, we got problems here.
There are various different things. Whether she rises or not, or be purified or not.
I'll tell you just one thing, and then we'll stop, because I don't like to run over. Your problem in conceptualizing it is hitting exactly to the point of self-existence. You are, it's insofar as you still have a tendency to think things are self-existent, you're having a problem with this idea. And I just say that. The thing that's bugging everybody about this idea, in Tibetan they say, it strikes on, sooner or later it boils down to ignorance. It's a misperception of the real existence of the thing.
We have it.
Somewhere in there, the reason it seems to you to be a, what they call it, paradox, is that you still have some perception of something there as self-existent. Okay.
All right. We'll get
anyway,
there.
Good.
We'll get there.
By the way, just a few announcements. I want to tell you when your last class will be and when your final.
Isn't it exactly 6 weeks after we started, more or less?
Not really.
He's going to tell us.
The 13th of December, which is a week, 2 weeks from tonight?
Yes.
There will be no class.
13th?
Monday the 13th of December. There will be no class. Because I have something. I have to go confess my bad teeth. It takes a couple hours. Monday, December 13th. Okay, no class. Which means then that you have your last, you have your review on Thursday the 16th. Like a fun. That's when you really want to come, because you get a preview. You get me pretty much telling you what's on the final, although I'll never admit that. And then on Monday the 20th, you have your final. And I really will give you some wiggle, but I just didn't get around to it.
So you just duplicate.
Oh! Lisa calls me, you don't know her. She collects degrees. She has an aerospace degree, a Greek degree. Wait, when do I get to doing this? Then, what is it?
Is
right
it
going to
be a gotcha?
Anyone who wants to stay?
Yeah, anybody who's interested in transcribing Henry Pichet's teaching should stay after a very short meeting.
And then, he's been teaching an incredible text on proving past lives.
Yeah, I know, Michael. I called Dieter, but he never called me back.
And he got a little miffed because some people didn't show up who were signed up for it. So he practically said he would stop pretty soon. So if anyone has any interest, I encourage you to come out Wednesday night, 7 o'clock.
In New Jersey.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trip.
You cannot do it on a weekend, Michael.
Or Sunday. If he doesn't stop this Wednesday, I'll let you know on Thursday.
So maybe Sunday.
Sunday's a better day.
But also it's
well, I'll try to twist his arm.
He always teaches at night? On Sunday night?
By the way, if you ever go down and you can sleep
there. In the afternoon, it would be great.
Free or whatever. I mean, there's no charge or anything. Sleep there for free, and then you can come back the next morning. I mean, I commute. You just get up and you come. Can I talk to you? You're welcome to do that.
Hello? Yeah, he's got about 10 more minutes to go before his class is finished. let me see if he'll be here tomorrow. Is he here tomorrow?
Yeah, all day.
All day tomorrow, he's here. Yeah.
Day off.
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, so if there's any way, but I'll let you know Thursday if he's going to continue that on Sunday. But it's incredible. It's just incredible. I've never been able to stop.
But why does he want to stop?
It's the only proof for Pastor
Joshua. Nobody showed up.
No, a lot of people showed up, but some people that he wanted to show up didn't. So the rest of us are like, well, why are you punishing us? Yeah, I didn't know he was going to stop.
I'll do the dishes.
Sorry to keep you late.
Up to the dishes.
One dishwasher, one vacuum.
Maybe the dishes are washed.
Well, I'll do whatever that is.
Do you have any vacuum? I have a rice cup.
I did the last two weeks.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't do it.
Okay. Okay, good night.